I welcome President Fernando Henrique Cardoso to the London School of Economics to receive an honorary doctorate. President Cardoso is an intellectual in politics and a man who has succeeded as both scholar and politician. He is eminent in academic fields central to the school's research and teaching in sociology and the political economy of development. Internationally known as one of the proponents of dependency theory, a highly influential school of thought about the nature of the process of social and economic development in an unequal world, he has published many books. Dependency and Development in Latin America, co-authored with Enzo Folletto, is a classic. 30 years after its publication, it remains an outstanding contribution to the historical sociology of Latin America. At the LSE, President Cardoso will be glad to know, 14 of his books and treatises can be found in the library, many of which are recommended reading in both undergraduate and graduate courses. What makes President Cardoso especially deserving of an honorary doctorate from this university is the fact that, in addition to his record of academic achievement, after all, he has held chairs in prestigious universities in Brazil, Chile, France, the United Kingdom, and the United States, he has played a remarkable role in the political transition of Brazil from dictatorship to democracy. A firm believer in the democratic process, he opposed the military rulers of Brazil for many years. Having gone into exile in the early phases of the military regime, he entered public life when democracy finally returned and helped to found a new social democratic party before winning a substantial popular mandate as Brazil's new president. In public life, he is famous for having played a major part in designing the plan which served to reduce inflation substantially without sacrificing economic growth. Inflation has fallen from 5,000% a year in the 12 months before the third phase of the stabilization plan was introduced in July 1994 to around 7% this year. Over this same period, economic growth has been sustained at around 4% per annum. This has been achieved through a combination of de-indexation, tight monetary policy, and the maintenance of a strong exchange rate against the dollar. The government is currently attempting to consolidate these achievements by undertaking a bold fiscal reform to reduce the public sector deficit. President Cardoso has worked hard to reconcile the social democratic principles in which he believes with acceptance of market forces. He has sought, finally, to reform Brazil's state institutions so that they remain relevant in a changing world. I give you President Cardoso. Well, can I say I'm very proud to welcome President Cardoso to the London School of Economics as, of course, a major political leader, but also as an academic colleague and, I hope, as a friend. I still remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, a few years ago, sitting in the garden on the veranda of my house in Cambridge, with President Cardoso. Well, he wasn't President Cardoso then, I think he was Minister of Finance, discussing sociology, discussing the impact of the global marketplace, and discussing the role of academics in politics. We were talking about, I think, whether it's possible to be a success as an academic and still maintain a successful full-time political career. He might not remember, but I think my argument at the time was that it's not possible to be a famous academic and also a celebrated political leader. Well, I'm very happy to say that President Cardoso, as you know, has proved me decisively wrong. President Cardoso is an academic of genuine worldwide distinction, a very famous sociologist at the first time that I met him. But of course, he is all now equally a renowned political leader of one of the largest and most influential countries in the world. He has shown, I think, that it is possible to sustain academic interests, to have a wide view of politics, to be interested in the ideas behind politics, but also, if I might say so, to be one of the most highly effective democratic political leaders that Brazil has ever had. For this double reason, I'm very happy that he should be here to receive the doctorate at the London School of Economics, and I now introduce his lecture about prospects and problems of democracy. President Cardoso, thanks very much for coming here today, and we're very keen to hear the lecture. Thanks very much.
Dear Professor Anthony Giddens, Director of the London School of Economic and Political Science, ladies and gentlemen, for someone who has devoted most of his life to academic activities within the field of social science, this is a very special moment. I am extremely touched and proud to receive this tribute from the London School of Economics and Political Science. This is for many reasons a highly respected institution, but above all, for having been able to channel critical thinking towards the constructive transformation of society. Much of my own work as a sociologist stands close to that spirit. But I believe that this initiative by the London School of Economics represents, above all else, a tribute to Brazil and the Brazilian people, a nation that, despite difficulties, has been able to change with optimism, tolerance, and with the spirit of the times. I should like, first of all, to offer my own tribute to Professor Anthony Giddens, to my friend, Tony, who today leads this school and whose ideas on the issues of our age have had a major influence in the academic and political world. He is one of the greatest social thinkers of all time. I would like to share with this audience some ideas on today's challenges to democracy. Democracy is a fundamental theme of political science. It is a theme that is provocative as it is inexhaustible, because it is basically linked to the permanent problem of defining what makes a good society, to the problem of the ability of men and women to create institutions that will ensure liberty and justice. In our times, however, concern over the manner in which democratic regimes are able to face the major contemporary issues is particularly relevant. As Professor Giddens teaches us from a somewhat different angle, some of the factors that favor the expansion of liberal democratic institutions contribute themselves to the creation of new challenges that appear to bring into question the ability of those institutions to act. some elements that were identified with the functioning of modern democracy, such as political parties, the use of the state as a mechanism for the promotion of social well-being, and at a more basic level, the idea that the state must be in full control of the processes that affected its people, have weakened. I shall mention just some aspects of the problem. Firstly, the relation to institutions, the mechanism for aggregation of interests, particularly political parties, find it difficult to keep up with the demands of representation made in the context of the thematic fragmentation that characterizes contemporary political life, which reflects the fragmentation of constituencies along the lines of specific sectional interests, which go far beyond the mere position occupied by the individual in the production system. Political parties share the arena with the NGOs, which offer a different perspective, a non-encompassing and deliberately segmented perspective. Secondly, due to the fiscal restrictions faced by the state in a situation where international involvement is inevitable and increasingly competitive, new limitations tend to affect the effort towards social inclusion for the construction of that intelligent combination of formal democracy and substantive democracy that has been the program of European social democracy. In the developed countries, this has led to the rethinking of the structures of social welfare. In the developing countries, this issue becomes even more complex because we are starting from the situation of an ill-fare state, if I may say so. And the challenge is even greater because advances in communications and transport techniques, as well as in the process of urbanization itself, have brought within everyone's reach not prosperity itself, but the image of the prosperity of others in their own country and in countries abroad. Thirdly, the process of globalization makes it more difficult for national projects to be carried out even when they have popular support. Several issues that affected people's daily lives involve transnational factors outside the control of governments. International financial flows are an obvious example of this, as they show the extent to which the structures of governance existing at the global level fall short of what would be required for this type of phenomenon to be dealt with within the framework of the democratic process. Finally, in Latin American countries, there is often the perception that the reestablishment of democracy in the 80s did not bring about solutions to social problems, and this sometimes gives away to a certain nostalgia for the authoritarian rule. Although not calling for its return, such nostalgia leads to impatience with the negotiating process that is an integral part of democracy, and to entertaining the notion that the executive branch of government could hold powers similar to those of an autocratic regime. I must confess that this is one of more striking situations when a person like me is in power and has a sincere democratic devotion, and from time to time I'm being asked to be more, not authoritarian, but to go quickly without taking into account the necessary negotiating process. And often this occurs, and occurs by pressure, originated in arenas which normally should be much more devoted to democracy, because then when they have been under an authoritarian rule, they have been undermined and were unable to do whatsoever or anything to improve the situation. But now some people believe that it's better to go more quickly, more directly, and more rapidly, and to solve problems as if it would be possible under a democratic regime to jump from one situation to another one without taking into account different interests entrenched in society. Having thus outlined the elements of the problem, we may now ask what solutions are available for democracy today. I believe that the answer lies not in less, but rather in more democracy. I maintain that it's necessary to radicalize democracy, to go to the roots of the process that permit a sovereign people to control its destiny in the new context created by contemporary mass society. We should view democracy not only as a point of arrival, but also as a point of departure. We are going through a unique historical opportunity with reasonable, stable international conditions. At the same time, we do not have a clear roadmap to help us chart the problems. For example, a complete economic theory accounting for the effects of globalization does not yet exist. As regards social relations, it is difficult to know how to carry out a process of change in contemporary society in the absence of all-embracing ideologies and in a situation where society often moves ahead faster than those who are trying to lead it. It is also difficult to know which can be the historical forces behind transformation processes when the state is becoming weaker and when so many new forms of social identity are superimposed on traditional class divisions. Too often have those who discuss these themes resorted to old concepts in an attempt to understand new situations. However, the fact that the issues are complex does not mean that we cannot have ideals or a sense of direction. Ideals include striking a balance in the process of listening to numerous fragmented demands. The key to this balance, which is central to the idea of the radicalization of democracy, is the idea that the state must serve all citizens effectively. How is that possible? First of all, it is necessary to work with a broad concept of citizenship, which, while retaining the old basis, essentially the notion of participation in politics, goes further and incorporates local and individual demands. The citizen is no longer simply a voter. He or she acts also as a member of a class, an ethnic group, a sexual minority, as an unemployed, a landless peasant, so on and so forth. And this multiplicity of points of view must be reflected in the functioning of the political system. And it's very difficult. It's enough to cross the street to see it. The state must be prepared to enter into a dialogue, a géométrie variable, with the diverse groups that reflect the plurality of identities of the individual in contemporary society. How can the citizen have any control in an economy in which the market is central and privatization a necessary course? One must overcome the simplistic notion that what is in the best interest of the citizenry has to originate necessarily in the state. The mechanism for regulating privatized public activities, communication, electricity, transport, etc., must be guided by the needs of the people and the direct participation by representatives of civil society in the bodies concerned is fundamental. The state must be porous and permeable to the needs of its citizens. The identification of the state with the national interest cannot be assumed, but it is a political construction, work that requires measured efforts to reach consensus. Democracy entails the need to ensure universal access to essential public service as one of the main conditions for bringing about an effectively participating citizenship. And naturally, the first such services are education and health. More than ever, education is a decisive factor in the building of citizenship, particularly in a country like Brazil, where so much remains to be done in this respect. Health is an equally indispensable element in the dignity of the citizen. Under present conditions, the solution to social problems calls for a creative partnership between the state and society. There is an arena for new forms of dialogue and combined action that could make a fundamental contribution to bringing about what has already been termed substantive democracy. We face the task of renewing the political dimension, the task of giving a voice to all under conditions of effective liberty. The public sphere should be really public, and under the conditions of contemporary democracy, this requires a sphere of debate and dialogue, a sphere of tolerance and respect for others. Radicalizing democracy means ensuring the right conditions for effective liberty so that all citizens, even those who are not formally organized, are able to have a say in the process. There is an important role here to the state in ensuring freedom of expression and in seeking to contribute to the building of the public arena. Finally, it will be necessary to find answers to the challenges posed by the globalization process to democracy. This issue must be examined outside the traditional framework of autarkic schemes. We shall not return to an international system of Westphalian mold. Interdependence between states today is a fact of life, and ignorance of this fact would condemn our efforts to the realm of fantasy. However, we can examine the question of what can and what must be regulated in the international field in order that the will of citizens may be exercised democratically. It is necessary, for example, to consider the role of the Bretton Woods institutions and the composition and the procedures of the United Nations Security Council. The consideration of these challenges to democracy could appear to suggest a task of such enormous complexity as to place an excessive burden on political systems that are already responding with difficulty to the daily needs of government and which are seen to be even less effective when it comes to carrying out major reforms. However, not everything depends on the political system, the parties, or the state. In our times, society often anticipates transformation and experiences processes of changes that arise straight from social movements at the grassroots level. This has been the case in Brazil, in the transition from authoritarian rule to democracy. A veritable democratic revolution took place within Brazilian society, with the emergence of new players, organizations, and social groups, and the defining of a new pattern of relations between society and the state, characterized by the demand for transparency, openness, and access to the decision-making process. More recently, the substratum of social democracy was what enabled the Brazilian people to exercise a clear and conscious option in favor of the economic stability achieved with the implementation of the Rio Plan. As a matter of fact, the Brazilian people, the success of economic stability has had a very important political significance. I must say, I'm not feeling very well. Can I take this?
Please do.
Do you have water? I will continue by reading. I will sit down.
As a matter of fact, the Brazilian people, the success of economic stability has had a very important political significance. Quite obviously, controlling inflation has not been the magical solution to all Brazil's problem. However, the real plan, or rather, economic stability, has united Brazilians and created a consensus on a national objective that has been defined and brought about through democratic means, as has been stressed by Professor Giddens. These brief observations of recent Brazilian history illustrates, in my view, the fact that the goal of radicalizing democracy cannot be achieved from top to bottom,
by government degree, but it involves the mobilization of society itself. It is largely a matter of removing obstacles to the strengthening of democracy and to its unimpeded exercise. Some of these obstacles are to be found within the state apparatus itself, hence the decisive importance of proposals aimed at reforming the state. We are multiplying and consolidating collective channels of expression, further decentralizing discussion and decision-making processes, making them more open to participation, bringing public authority closer to the people and the people closer to public authority. In essence, we are going to the Latin root of the word power by conveying to the citizens the certainty that they can voice their options, and it is worth the effort that they can contribute to change, and that, again, it is worth that effort. This spells out the full meaning to the term citizenship. Although under different circumstances, I find some perspective in the concept of a stakeholder society so ably elaborated by Prime Minister Tony Blair under your influence, sir. When I am asked if this radically pluralistic democracy, this increasingly democratic democracy, will resolve the problem of exclusion, my answer is clear, yes. All the more so because there is no alternative. I think this is very important. We have to insist on the idea that only through democratic mechanisms and institutions we can solve the problem of inclusion, because otherwise we'll be confronting and we'll be in front of a kind of impasse without solution. In addition, if society is many-sided in its essence, the solutions cannot but reflect this fact. The plight of the poor who are marginalized from the development process is not the only form of exclusion. Important as it is only one form. In fact, there are several forms of exclusion, that of women, children, the elderly, the uneducated, the unemployed, the disabled, victims of violence, the landless, those affected by pollution and environment damage. It is not enough, therefore, to politicize just one line of exclusion following the model of class struggle. All forms of exclusion must be politicized, and in all these areas, mobilization must be encouraged. Organizations must be formed, and the channels between such organizations and the state must be expanded. Maintaining that the simplistic dichotomies between left and right, workers and capitalists, should be replaced by an acknowledgement of the complex of our societies does not mean being conservative, as some fundamentalists would have us believe, in the sense which Professor Giddens used the term. On the contrary, it means accepting change and seeking even greater change. It means being prepared to participate in the building of something really new. It is in the spirit of this intellectual challenge that I sincerely wish the young students of the London School of Economics and Political Science that they may have the good fortune to contribute to the building of a world that is more democratic, more prosperous, and more inclined towards solidarity, a radically better world. I must thank you very much. And excuse me, because I was not able to read anything. It's possible to combine, you know, both sides, the political activity and intellectual activity. You see, it's not that easy.
Thank you for that also performance.
an ordeal up here with these robes on. Right. Would anyone like to ask a question of President Barroso? There is a roving microphone somewhere. Would you like to take your gown off? Because
No, it's all right. I love to have.
In the coming millennium, the key question will be exactly how to deal with this globalization, economic globalization process without having a political power legitimated by people. So that's the question, you see. And how to legitimate a political, international political order without being able, through that order, to offer better ways of life for people and better social conditions for people. So this is the key question. Of course, it will take at least 100 years to to reconstruct it, the whole system. But this is obvious. We are facing this kind of problem just now, you see? The institutions created after the Second World War were very important in order to reestablish the flows of trade and how to, you know, in terms of financing the trade, it was okay. The Bretton Woods Institution, the IMF, plus the World Bank, maybe now the BIS, but it's not enough to cope with the new civilization. You see, with these new techniques, so on and so forth. So it is a tremendous political challenge. So H.G. Wells was, in that sense, a man looking at the future.
We just have one more question, perhaps.
Are you choosing the LSE, sir?
Always a student. Maybe the only elected president in the world that makes a formal appeal for radicalizing democracy and new forms of mobilization against the state. Can you elaborate that a bit? That's it.
Well, this is a real challenge to me because, in fact, normally this is what refer to the same question posed by Professor Giddens. I mean, to what extent it's possible for a person who is the leader of the state apparatus to ask for to some extent, state mobilization and NGOs, you see, and other forms of non-official or non-clearly institutionalized forms of action. Anyhow, to my mind, what is important in our days is exactly that the fact that what some people used to call the civil society is able to mobilize independently from the state. But this poses another enormous challenge. What to do with the political system? What to do with the party system? How is it possible to relate the party systems with social demands? To what extent social forms of mobilizations out of the institutions, of the political institutions, will be able to really, you know, put pressure on the state apparatus and to get the results from their action? To what extent the civilian societies, civil organizations, will be really able to understand also their role, because otherwise they will be only against, without, you know, looking for solutions, and you have to, you know, to combine. But that's the key question. And how to keep with the idea of democratic institutions, not democracy, but democratic institutions facing this new world, you know, in which you have a kind of generalized forms of demands, and also the generalized ways to legitimize demands, you see? I think this is the new world. And if men in power will be not able to understand what's going on, they will be isolated, and they will be all time against society, because society appears to them as enemies, And it's not. This is not a good way to solve the questions. You see, let me put very clearly. When I came here, I saw a small group here of Brazilians and maybe some English speaking about landless people. This is a form of pressure. I think it's okay to have this form of pressure. My initial impulse is to go there. I asked permission to Professor Giddens to try to establish a dialogue. It's difficult because they don't want to dialogue. We have to force them to dialogue because they believe, well, dialogue means maybe they will be co-opted. They will be, submitted to the formal forms of politics. So they prefer to be alone and to be isolated. But this is not the future. This is the past. In the future, they will be, I hope, they will be more sensible to to some new necessities, new forms of dialogue. I think this is very important. Both sides, civilian society and state, and people involved in state, including political parts, have to learn again how to behave.
Could I, in drawing this conclusion, say again how honored the LSE is to have President Cardoso here. Thank him again for his incisive lecture delivered under trying circumstances, and wish him every good fortune during his visit to the UK, because surely a better relationship between Britain and Brazil is a very important thing for the world. So thank you again very much indeed.
I'm really sorry about that. Thank you very much. Are you going to lead the way?